This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Millions of Americans are affected by mental health issues every day of the year. Today, we're bringing back a show that focuses on this very important issue. We see mental illness when we walk or drive by the homeless on our streets, and it touches us when someone we know has lost a loved one to suicide, or we go through the loss ourselves. The five most common mental health disorders include depression, anxiety, eating disorders, substance abuse, and attention deficit disorder. Despite the stigma surrounding mental health illness, approximately one in five adults in the U.S. experiences mental illness in any given year. Joining us for today's show are Tricia Kajimura, Executive Director of the Hawaii Chapter of Mental Health America, Kumi McDonald, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI Hawaii, Adam Coles, Clinical Director of the Maui Family Guidance Center, and Wayne Law, Kauai Program Services Manager for Mental Health Kokua, retired from the Department of Health, Adult Mental Health Division in 2013 with some 38 years of service. This is a rebroadcast of a show we aired in May during Mental Health Month. We began the show with Adam Coles of the Maui Family Guidance Center sharing about outreach events that were going on in his county.
Hey, good morning. I'm a child psychiatrist, and when I started working with Mental Health America, our Maui County coordinator, Danielle Bergen, and Tricia really wanted to work together with the state with some funds that we had recently gotten to work on youth suicide prevention in Maui County. So we recently had a workshop for Maui youth, and I think we had six or seven high schools represented. Youth came from all over the county, including Molokai and Hana, to get some teaching from Deb Gibbard, who's at the JABSM, the John A. Burns School of Medicine Department of Psychiatry. She came over for the day, did some teaching. She ran a Connect training, which is one of our best kind of trainings for youth to help them connect with local supports and also teach their peers how to do some of this. And they also had youth suicide and bullying prevention. And then in the afternoon, we did some safe messaging exercises where high schoolers worked on messages that would go out in things like social media and meme generation and other avenues of kind of online communication to promote suicide prevention and really kind of accessing resources and supports. And they're really the best at forming this kind of messaging than old folks like me. So it was a really great day. Very successful.
Well, you know, I had a friend on Molokai who had emailed just mentioned that there were a number of recent suicides there and that, you know, Molokai is a small community and really affected a lot of families there.
Absolutely. We think a lot about Molokai and a lot of folks have been going over there, including Danielle, as I mentioned, Robin Lee, who's our center chief at Maui Family Guidance Center. They both went over to do youth suicide and bullying prevention training just recently. And we have our care coordinator over there for the State Department of Health who works with the community. She's local and her husband, very well known, very well respected. So we think a lot about this, and prevention is key with youth because that really seems to spread through the peer networks when you work with kids and high schoolers.
And Wayne Law, Kauai just did something, I think, on Tuesday, right?
So actually today there is a Safe Talk training going on, and then in June there'll be an assist training. So we do have a prevention suicide Kauai task force. In fact, we have a website. It's preventsuicidekauai.org, where people can go on and look at data, information, training, upcoming trainings, and that kind of thing that is going on here on Kauai.
So talk about Kauai's numbers, because we hear that a lot of the suicide rates are generally higher. I think they were very high for Hawaii Island at one point. But what's a snapshot on Kauai?
Well, in looking at it briefly, it appears that we are kind of consistent in a sense across the state that we are below national trends. There were about 12 persons per 100,000 per year, the way the data works out. However, when you look at the rate of suicide given the population, we look like from, I think, between 2013 through 17, our rate is similar to the Big Island.
Okay. And Tricia, talk to us about suicide is really a very serious thing and a very dramatic reaction to an illness. You have a personal experience to share.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's Kumi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, I've been, for the past 30 years, have been working on call for psychiatric emergencies at Wilcox Hospital emergency room. And there are three of us right now that are rotating that call. And annually, we see approximately 600 patients. The vast majority, upwards of 90% of those, come in with some kind of suicidal thoughts, feelings, ideation, and or gesturing, or attempts. And so we see quite a bit of that, actually. Interestingly, the people who come in, for the most part, are the ones who do not commit suicide. We have been fortunate over the 30 years I've been doing this with Wilcox to, I think, have lost one person over that 30-year period who was seen in the ER and then left and something happened and we lost that person. But of the many other, actually thousands over the years, those folks who do get in and get some help tend to survive and get through it. We hospitalize probably, say the 600 people that come in and 90% or so of those who have that suicidal ideation, we really only hospitalize probably 5% of them who are truly suicidal, who are really at high risk. The others, we're able to work with them. Many people are impulsive. They get upset. They get hurt. They need attention, and not just attention-seeking, but attention that I don't feel well. Things are not going well in my life. And once those things are heard and sorted out and people calm down, most often a safety plan is able to be effected, follow-up engagement with treatment, and help people to not just resolve the incident, but to be able to develop and refine skills of coping when things go wrong in their lives emotionally. And so we see a significant number of people who are able to improve their lives by getting help.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And you know, we understand that you currently provide on-call psychiatry emergency coverage to Wilcox. So
yes.
Thanks for that perspective. And Kumi, mm-hmm. you have a story to share about, I think it was your mm-hmm. child.
Yes, so NAMI was founded by family members who have loved ones with mental health issues. And so we are all about training and equipping and empowering, supporting family members so that some of these things can be prevented way before it gets to the point of suicide. And so for me, it's very passionate cause for me because my family was very affected by mental illness, including myself growing up, as well as my own son. So he was a college brilliant young man going to the University of Hawaii, Manoa, and he just quit school one day, junior year. He wasn't going to school. Weeks turned into months, turned into years. He'd be curled up in a ball, and I'd open the door thinking, please, God, let him still be breathing this morning. And, you know, it was a really challenging time. And it was NAMI where we learned how to communicate with him, how to get him help, how to give ourselves, family members, support so that we can be empowered to get help for our children, our loved ones with mental illness. And so my son did struggle with depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation for many years, up and down. And there were very dark times. But luckily, we were so blessed because through the programs that I went through, support groups, classes, we were able to get help for my son. And he's thriving now. So we're just really living out all the things that I believe in within our organization.
Right. So if we can get the prevention mm-hmm. in there, get the services in the right hands of the people who need them. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, one thing I really appreciate about Kumi sharing her story is that it really also speaks to stigma. Mm-hmm. By sharing her story, she's lessening the stigma of mental illness, of suicidal thoughts. And we all know somebody who's struggled with it, or we've struggled with it ourselves. So that's a really important element mm-hmm. is reducing stigma around mental health issues so that people are not ashamed to seek help.
And there are a number of variety of types of mental illnesses, and some are more severe than others. Some lead to eating disorders, et cetera, that kind of a thing.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. This is a recorded show, so no new calls are being taken. Our focus today, mental health and our well-being. We do have a call. Duane from Honolulu, what's on your mind?
Are you there?
I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yes.
I'm on.
Do you have a question?
Hi. My name is Dwayne Elliott. I'm an executive director for Boys to Men Mentoring, and this is a really close piece for our organization. We do mentoring. We usually start in the 7th and 8th grade and go all the way through high school, and we mentor in school during school hours, and we also do weekend trips of boys that don't have fathers and at-risk youth. And we've had our own experiences with the suicide, and I'm really appreciative of the time and the focus on this. And for us, we found that if the boys that isolate they start telling themselves a story in their head, I'm not good enough, or people don't like me, or mom and dad didn't like me, or I'm alone because my dad left because of me. And in our group settings, we found that when we can get boys to not internalize that message, that we can actually see that I'm not alone. And by going through that experience, you know, we can kind of keep that at bay. And if it's, you know, we had one of our boys commit suicide after being in our program for 5 years, and another one tried and was on the Big Island, because we're in 4 islands right now. And what we've really learned, all of our mentors are now being trained in this piece, is that, you know, to ask questions and persuade and refer to help. And the boy that we referred to some help actually kind of had a great breakthrough in our last weekend. He was an 11th grader. He was on our leader team and telling the 7th and 8th graders about how he almost took his life and how not to go down that path, because that's not the answer. And the ramifications on these suicides through the community is, at that age, they just don't know, you know, the impact. And so I appreciate the conversation today, and I just know in our organization that something's really close to our heart after losing a boy that was so, you know, in our program for so many years.
It sounds like getting to change the self-talk, I guess, is very important, somehow reaching these kids and changing the conversation that they're having.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, and he mentioned social connection and how it's so important. Like, the mentoring for young boys is very, you know, impactful, I think, because the lack of social connection is something that can exacerbate mental health issues. So that's a really important strategy for them to be working on.
Can you talk at all about, let's say, the crisis lines that are set up throughout the state? Anybody? I don't know who wants to jump in on this.
Sure. Definitely they can look on our website, mentalhealthhawaii.org, and we'll have several crisis lines listed. There's local, there's national, there's even a crisis text line. You can text 741741 from any cell phone to reach help through text. There's a number of lines and sites that have these resources.
Say the crisis line for neighbor islands is 1-800-753-6879. It's toll free for all neighbor islands. And even if you call the national crisis hotline, they'll link you up with Hawaii resources as soon as they know you're from an 808 area code.
And so, what else is Maui County doing to help families out there?
So I work for the State Department of Health, and I think the name of the game in Maui County is collaboration, because there aren't enough resources in any one place, whether it's Department of Health or our allied providers. So we contract and cooperate with a number of agencies throughout Hawaii, well-known names like Aloha House, Child and Family Services, Maui Youth and Family Services, the Department of Education, of course, and Department of Human Services. So the most success we've had is really getting together on the phone or around a table to talk about challenging cases as well as challenging areas. And I agree completely with my colleagues who agree that isolation is, for me, one of the big glowing red flags. When we lose visibility of someone from the school setting, from a healthcare setting, when their own family or friends notice that they haven't seen a person or talked to someone in a while, it's time to get curious, and it's time to start looking for them and reaching out to that person, because isolation is key. So throughout the year, our Maui County Suicide Prevention Task Force, which is a subchapter of the statewide task force, we call ourselves Aolaho, we kind of infiltrated a number of community events like the Office on Aging's annual conference, we attend the Maui Comic Con, which is put on by Maui Comics and Collectibles. And so these folks give us free space and a table to be at their event and give out information and talk with people and do outreach. In events where people are kind of in amongst, a social setting where they are comfortable, you know, kind of in their tribe. And I'm a super nerd, so I go to the Comic-Con, and so it's a conversation where folks kind of feel a little more included in a very inclusive community.
And Wayne Law, do you think we have enough service providers out there?
Well, I know if you're here on, I assume anywhere, but here on Kauai, as a rural island, we do have, I think, a dearth of providers, particularly in the area of psychiatry. One of the things before I get into that, I wanted to share that I find is impactful and helpful when I talk to people in the emergency room or talk with family members. You know, there's a stigma, as one of my colleagues had mentioned already, about mental illness and even suicidal thoughts and ideas and those kinds of things. There's a stigma around it. We don't want to talk. And one of the things I tell our people is that you cannot stop feelings or thoughts from coming into our minds and our hearts, but we can choose to act upon them in safe ways. And so there's no shame. There's no shame in having those feelings. They are uncomfortable, but they're respectable. And as we work with them and express them, we can begin to deal with them. And I think that's an important thing for families to remember, too, that we don't want to run from it. We want to acknowledge it and then be able to work with it. But back to providers. I know we have a lot of agencies and individual practitioners here on Kauai who work really hard. And I come from a systems perspective, I think, in my career in the Department of Health. And I think one of the problems we have is that we often work in silos, particularly for those individuals who have more complex problems, the severe and persistent mentally ill, and people who are duly diagnosed with substance use disorders. Is that we often find that certain practitioners are trying to work with them, but they need more. And a lot of times there's, I think we work in silos, and there's not as much integrated services as could be managed. Now, fortunately, on a small island, we're a small community, so people do talk more. And particularly in the child-adolescent area, I think that's way more integrated over here than in the adult side. I think even from the bigger systems perspective, some of the issues that come up over and over and over again, as an example, the state departments need to figure out how to break down barriers and communicate and set up processes that coordinate services together. So you have a person, say, who is seriously mentally ill, breaks the law, goes to jail. They come out, they have nothing. They've lost their benefits. They have no insurance. Their SSI may have stopped, or their cash benefits may have stopped, their insurance stops, and they're usually let out of jail in the late afternoon with nothing. Then we all kind of wonder why they end up back in jail again, because they go back to what they did before. We need to figure out a way to be able to better communicate between agencies and departments and services, so that, as an example, this is what I give. The mental health center folks can go into the jail and eligibilize a person. You have to become eligible in order to get services. You can't get an appointment very easily now. There are a number of barriers to get their entitlements. DHS doesn't do anything at all until a person is out and comes to them. So if those things could be prepped prior to them coming out, an appointment set so that it triggers immediately, and coordination for services, we have a chance of helping that individual get back on their feet and get into service.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. If you're just joining us, we're rebroadcasting our May conversation about mental health in Hawaii. Our guests are Wayne Law, Kauai Program Services Manager for Mental Health Kokua, who's retired from the Department of Health. Adam Cole is the Clinical Director of the Maui Family Guidance Center. Kumi McDonald, the Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI Hawaii, and Tricia Kajimura, Executive Director of the Hawaii Chapter of Mental Health America. This is a recorded show, so no new phone calls are being taken, and there will be data references to events that have already occurred.
Let's go now to David from Glenwood. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Aloha. I just wanted to make a question and a comment. Well, first of all, I think we have a spiritual health issue that's causing the mental health problem. But I overheard you say that we have also there's eating disorders. I remember reading a book called Johnson, Livingston, Seagull years ago. I think Richard Bach was author anyway. A metaphor that he used was that most of the flock flew so that they could get food, and they all went out to the ships and fought over the fish and the dead stuff on the ship. And then Jonathan decided that he loved flying so much that he chose, instead of to fly for food, that he would eat just so he could fly. So my personal comment also is that we need to find an inspiration. Each one of us is an individual that came into this world maybe for a reason or a purpose, but the main thing is to find your inner inspiration so that you have joy. You're doing something from your heart as much as your mind, and you have joy in your actions and your activity. And it's really hard to do with the stifling economy that's based on war, but that's a duty that we each have to do for ourselves.
Thank you so much for that. You know, I haven't thought about that book for a very long time, Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Well, NAMI really believes that we have to heal the whole person. It's not just the mind. It is about your health, your lifestyle, and your faith plays a key part in our recovery. And so we have a chapter within our programs called FaithNet, and that allows us to help people, families, who are recovering from mental illness to tap in and say, hey, how does faith play a role in our recovery and our healing?
And I have to say, too, for folks who have had a family member or a loved one commit suicide, you know, it's the pain afterwards. You know, how do you help those families recover from something like that?
Well, dealing with grief is an incredibly important part of your own mental health. And so what I would encourage families to do is seek professional psychotherapy or counseling services as needed so that they don't bury this within them, that they don't try to shut down their feelings for too long, and that they work on processing through it.
And NAMI has family support groups, and they meet all over the island. We have in Maui and Kauai, Big Island, and on Oahu. And these families, many of them are survivors who have lost loved ones, died by suicide. And so they give each other support and help each other. But there's also some great other support group agencies specifically for grief and for suicide.
I know when I feel overwhelmed, I say, okay, I'm going to allow myself to be depressed for a half hour. I'm going to go for a walk and be sad. Mm-hmm. But after that half hour, then, you know, I'm going to bounce back. So I guess that's my self-talk. I compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. But maybe, you know, folks might have a difficult time doing that if they've got something else going on, a chemical imbalance. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Wayne, that you want to add about what you've seen in the ER?
Well, again, I think that anytime somebody verbalizes thoughts of suicide or, again, as one of my colleagues mentioned earlier, when they disappear, or when we find them reclusive and whatnot, it's time to try to do what we can to get them help. But we spend a lot of time, I kind of enjoy the ER work because sometimes you have that teaching moment where you can really reach in and touch somebody and help them to get connected. A lot of people who come in have never been connected to anything before. I'm surprised at how many people we see that really didn't know what to do, and then this explodes, and they often, the police are involved, and they bring them in. And after we're able to sit and work with them and try to, you know, through empathetic listening and work with them, help them to see there is a better way and to connect them with services. Fortunately, there are a number of really competent providers here who on Kauai who are available to see people. So that's very helpful.
Can we talk about substance abuse? Because a lot of times that goes hand in hand, and then it just is so difficult.
Yes, and I know on Kauai that is a real problem in terms of services. We have a real dearth of substance abuse services. There's only one residential treatment program, which is Women in Need, has a few beds for women. Other than that, there's really no adult residential treatment programs. We have recently just lost an intensive outpatient and outpatient treatment program from Kauai. And there are a couple of other really good ones, but there's not enough slots, and or some of them take only certain insurances. So we have a major problem with people who have substance use issues, and then it's more complicated for those folks who are seriously mentally ill and have substance abuse issues.
And Adam, what's the snapshot there on Maui?
Yeah, I agree with my colleague Wayne. We're pretty limited. For adults on Maui, Aloha House has a residential program, an outpatient program. But I think, as he said, dual diagnosis programs are few and far between. For youth, we don't have a residential program here. They have to fly to Oahu and enter Bobby Benson Center there on Oahu, and that adds an additional layer of difficulty for families who are trying to kind of work with their child and visit them. We fly family over for visits and passes, and we have a telepresence capability here that allows families to work with youth who are on Oahu, whether at Bobby Benson or in hospital-based residential or community-based residential. But we really do have a need for higher levels of care on Maui, in Maui County, to really help especially those families who lack the funds for transportation. And substance abuse treatment isn't really a dual diagnosis except for that one center. And I think it's, again, an example of the siloing that Wayne talks about, where really, to me, it's kind of an artificial divide. And also, we have this problem of transition between youth services and adult services, so that we actually have to close youth services before adult can open. And it's an example of what Wayne was talking about. There's a chance there for someone to slip through the cracks when really we need to overlap.
I wonder, too, about the substance abuse amongst the homeless population.
It's huge.
When they're dealing with mental health issues.
You know, what we've noticed is, and the research shows, is that many people who have substance abuse issues tend to have an underlying mental health issue. And we call that dual diagnosis or co-occurring, but a lot of times it's something small that goes, unnoticed, like depression, anxiety. Many, 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 many people who self-medicate because of anxiety, when they could get help, they can go to a psychiatrist or even their primary care physician. Instead, they just go straight to what's acceptable, drinking or marijuana or other types of substance. And that's what gets a lot of people into trouble.
And Tricia, anything else you want to add, just what you've seen?
Well, I think you mentioned folks who are homeless, and I work in downtown, so certainly we know that there's people living on the sidewalks there who are in very, complex mental health conditions, and fortunately we have agencies doing outreach and even street medicine, and we're just hoping that those efforts can continue and that our state can invest further into those services so that we can get more people off the streets and on treatment that they need.
Yeah, I worry because I see a lot of the folks that are out on the front lines, whether they're in the ER in a hospital or hospital staff on a ward, when you're dealing with these issues, it is so overwhelming. And, my heart goes out to them because you see them experiencing this on a, just a regular basis. And they can't just leave. It's their job. They're there to help.
Right.
But whether it's somebody, let's say a librarian at a public library, that interfaces with our homeless community or hospital staff, mm-hmm. you know that they're there to help, but at the same time, when you see them struggle, your heart goes out to them as well.
And what we're hoping to do is get more training to them, and we know that more and more organizations, like the libraries, that you wouldn't think of right away, are trying to get better training on mental health for their employees. So one thing that we're starting to offer is mental health first aid training, which is an evidence-based, nationally recognized 8 hours. So it's a significant investment of time, but it will help people be more familiar with mental health disorders, how to recognize them, understand them, and how to help someone just at a lay level get some assistance.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. This is a recorded show, so no new calls are being taken. Our focus today, mental health and our well-being. You can share your feedback via email, talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break. We're back with The Conversation, and we are going to reach out to the Big Island, Dory from Volcano. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Aloha.
Aloha.
Yes. Hi. I have been listening to this, and it's very meaningful to me. I actually would like to share a little about what it looks like for a mother primary caregiver for a young adult with a very severe mental health diagnosis. And how important the family ingredient is to the support of a very, you know, a young adult, especially. My son has schizophrenia, which in the DSM is classified as one of the most difficult diagnoses that one can be, you know, dealt the hand of having, without sometimes any real reason about how it happened. My son went away to a mainland university, and after his freshman year came home with something severely wrong. And I think I heard another caller or one of your panelists talk about her son. Life as you know it, when you are faced with this, completely changes for not just your child, young adult, girl, boy, but the whole family. It's also very difficult for a family to understand, to have the wherewithal to see it through, because often it is so sorrowful and traumatizing for everyone involved, but of course much worse for the young adult.
Do you feel that you have enough services there on the Big Island?
No. There's a huge lack of, especially here on the Big Island. You know, it's an island 8 times the size of Oahu. It might have 1/3 the population. But because of the lack of services, you know, my son's been in trouble a couple of times with positive symptoms attributed to his schizophrenia that are so debilitating often. And my son has finally, after years here, 5 years here, moving from Oahu for a therapeutic change in setting after my son's diagnosis, we were really rudely awakened to how little we were going to be able to get health care. And I'm kind of a tiger mother. I turn over all stones, I exhaust all avenues. I've been the hugest advocate for more mental health services here that a mother can be. I've tossed around, do I open my own case management service? Do I start my own clubhouse? Again, all of this takes backing, planning, financial help. It's not that easy, and it's not fast enough.
Well, we certainly thank you for reaching out to us. And Kumi, I'm sure you can relate.
Well, I totally can relate as a mother, it's very daunting. It affects the entire family and oftentimes brings a lot of havoc and chaos within the family. And so that is why NAMI provides support and education. We have this 12-week class that teaches step-by-step how to understand the illness, how to get help, how to talk to your son, how to communicate, all of these things that are so important from the family. And also NAMI is all run by volunteers. We're all volunteers with lived experiences who get trained to teach these classes or support groups. So I encourage this mother to contact me because we are expanding services on the Big Island from the family perspective. We have an excitement happening in Hilo and Volcano, Kona. There's a little bit something happening on that island that there's a lot of families coming together said, hey, we want to expand services for our families.
Right, because you have to speak up together.
Yes.
To be heard.
Mm-hmm.
We have another call, this time from Honolulu. Derek, good morning.
Yes, hi, how's it going?
Good.
Aloha. Thank you so much for having me. Well, I just wanted to kind of go in directly and talk about, you know, everyone's, you know, explaining how, you know, what we do to battle mental illness from the perspective of when it happens, as opposed to what we do before, you know, these symptoms arise. You know, when we had the gentleman earlier who was saying that, you know, if you start to have suicidal thoughts, maybe you should seek help, as opposed to just breaking down the stigmatization mm-hmm. of therapy in general. You know, I think that, you know, it could be a preemptive strike to kind of battle these situations and kind of talk about what we're going through to medical physicians.
It's important to take that step.
Well, you know, we believe that mental health affects every human.
Yeah.
Whether it's mental illness or whether it's on the spectrum, whatever, but I'm just saying mental health affects every human. So we have to start before it becomes an illness, right? De-stress and take care of ourselves and then say, hey, it's okay if I need to talk to a therapist, if I need to get medication, it's okay to talk about it.
All right. And, you know, there are a number of folks this morning who mentioned the stigma. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we can talk about that. You know, what are we doing to make everybody understand it's okay? You know, you're going through a tough time. Talk about it. You know, get some help.
Well, we definitely want to target youth. Right. So the conference that they had on Maui was very important in reaching youth and youth leaders within their community. We would also like to see more done in the school system with the Department of Education and for youth across the state, just as a part of their health curriculum, to receive basic mental health education and to know what resources are available to them. We'd like more anonymous reporting available to students and for teachers and staff to get more training on how to recognize and assist students in a non-judgmental, accepting, open way.
And what can you tell us came out of the legislative session? Because I think there were a
sure.
number of fronts where people were working toward this.
Yeah, there were some good measures passed this session. And in the youth area, there was a bill passed that will require the Department of Education to provide some youth suicide prevention training to school personnel. So, you know, we'd like to see that spread to students as well, but it is a step that they will need to provide that for their faculty and staff. There was also some monies appropriated for youth suicide prevention on in neighbor island counties, which is a positive step. And also September has been designated as Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. So we're making some progress in that area.
So I think then folks in the community are recognizing we have a problem, we have a crisis. Let's focus our energy and our efforts toward doing something to prevent the rate of suicide going up.
And I think NAMI, what we like to do is say that it's okay to talk and share. And that is a big component of one of our many of our programs, is that we go and share our stories. And that really is the greatest way to break stigma. When I come up and say, I am the executive director and I struggle with depression, my son struggled with depression, it's okay to say that we can have successful lives. We can be, you can be Abraham Lincoln, you can be Mother Teresa, you can be Martin Luther King Jr., and have mental illness and still be a success and a contributor to society.
And I think this past year we saw some very high profile people who took their own lives,
yes.
You know, whether it's the designer Kate
yes.
Spade,
yes.
just a number of people, comedians, right? We
yes.
we thought, oh my gosh, these people, they've reached, you know, the height of their career, they're well known, they have everything, and yet they really don't, if you don't have your mental health. And so I think it's an important point that you made.
Yes. So this is from Mental Health America, and Tricia is going to have an event this coming next week.
Yes.
Yes. So maybe Mental Health Month, the largest event that we have at Mental Health America of Hawaii is our annual Mahalo Awards Luncheon. And at this event, which will be our 14th annual, we recognize local mental health heroes. So outstanding community leaders in different areas, including youth advocacy, family advocacy, consumer advocacy. We recognize six of them next week, Tuesday, at the Ala Moana Hotel. So registration is still open until tomorrow at noon. And they can do that through our website, mentalhealthhawaii.org.
Okay, so we want to give the kudos, acknowledgement to the folks that have been out there.
It's important to recognize what's going right and the people that are making a difference.
Right, these are the caregivers, right?
Yes, and leaders, advocates.
Anything else that you want to add, Wayne or Adam?
Yeah, I think that I agree that the family component is so key, and a lot of child psychiatrists, my colleagues, think of ourselves as family psychiatrists. So I think if we can just broaden our thinking as a profession and really get rid of that kind of artificial divide, you know, a lot of things do change. We get our license, we become, you know, eligible to vote and things. But a lot of other things are kind of a continuum as we get older. And it's very difficult, I think, at times to maintain our mental health when we're going through some of these transitions, like to high school or to college. And that's why we see sometimes these illnesses crop up when our stress level in a new situation really gets beyond our ability to cope with it, especially if we're away from family.
All right, thank you for that, Adam. And Wayne, what about you?
I think, you know, most of my career has been centered around adult serious mental illness population, and we at Mental Health Kukua, as an example here, provide transitional living and help people to integrate back into the community, case management, homeless outreach. I think that even though they're adults, family is still a really important principle. We try really hard to encourage family participation and helping to continue that integration with the family. A lot of our homeless people don't have family or don't know where they are. We've seen situations where families have figured their loved one have either died or have been lost for years, and when that opportunity to reconnect comes, it's just joyous to watch. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I also still think that access to the services that do exist is very difficult to get through. It's very bureaucratic. Again, some of the services have actually declined. I know here at the Community Mental Health Center, the static capacity has gone from 450 people a year to, and that's constant, so a static capacity down to less than 300. There's something that needs to be done at a broader level in terms of how to increase the services that are so important and in how to make it easier for people to get in. I'm not mentally ill, fortunately for me, and I have a hard time maneuvering through the bureaucratic system to get people help. Imagine if you're homeless, if you are psychotic and having a hard time and you're abusing substances, and now you're supposed to manipulate the system to get help. People give up. So again, I think as providers, all of us, as advocates, we need to continue to pull together and work closely with the state departments, the agencies, the government, to try to see what headways we can make to make these services much more available and much easier to get.
Thank you for that, Wayne. And Tricia, can you talk about the other things that passed this session? I know there was a big push to change the way we treat the mentally ill on the streets.
Yeah, I think you're referring to assisted community treatment. So that was a law that was originally passed a few years ago, I think in 2013, that would mandate people under certain circumstances to take medication or to be treated for their very severe mental illnesses. Those people often are homeless or usually homeless in that eligibility category. The law turned out to be rather difficult to implement, and this year the legislature passed two measures that would help with implementation. One that provides funds for legal assistance because it is a judiciary proceeding and requires an attorney or attorneys, and the nonprofits and families that have been trying to help people through the system are not able to afford it. So there's some funding there that should help more people to get through this petition process. The other requires determination of whether a person being discharged from a psychiatric facility should have an assisted community treatment plan. So hopefully that will lead to more people benefiting from this program.
And then we should probably shout out to some of the folks that are out working in the streets.
Yes, definitely. So I think hopefully people have heard of Dr. Chad Koyanagi, who is the psychiatrist doing street medicine and working with IHS to put assisted community treatment into action. And I know they've been working very hard to get more people help through that program.
Anything you would like to add about what NAMI is doing to help maybe with the families of folks that are out on the street?
So oftentimes we get the call and saying, we're at the last breaking point, and what do we do? Our son exhausted all the resources. He's kicked out of every place. And that's where we come in, and we give families hope. We say there is a solution. There is hope. And so it oftentimes, we hear success story after success story of preventing homelessness. We've also, on the other side, the homeless, we've seen families reunited. We've seen where the person with the homeless addiction or mental illness will say, I don't have family, but they do. They have people that are praying for them or looking for them. And we're the support for that person or that family. And we've seen a lot of good stories where we've reunited them.
Okay, we've got about 2 minutes left. Anything else you want to add, Wayne or Adam?
For me, it's just, you know, I've been doing this for 43 years now. And I think the reason I do it is because when I'm able to see even a small movement in a positive direction in a person's life, It brings some real satisfaction, especially if I'm able to have something to do with it. And I've enjoyed the opportunity to work on the systems level, and that's where I think we still need some more work.
All right. Thank you for that, Wayne. Adam, any last final positive note you want to end on?
Yeah, I agree completely with my colleagues. And I did want to share one hashtag that the kids came up with yesterday, which I think encapsulates everything. It was hashtag better off said instead of better off dead. And I thought it was just perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better off said, talk, communicate, reach out. Kids are amazing, mm-hmm. and I love working with them.
Very powerful. Thank you so much for your contributions today, for your time today, mm-hmm. and for all that you do for our community, whatever island you're working on. Anything else to look forward to? We've got the event next week. Any other final
we have
thoughts?
NAMI is partnering with another agency, and we're going to provide a consumer or people living in recovery conference in July. Also, we have our charity walk coming up in October, and we have some other exciting events in the fall with Mental Health America.
All right. We'd like to thank our guests, Kumi McDonald, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Tricia Kajimura, the Executive Director of the Hawaii Chapter of Mental Health America, Adam Coles with the Maui Family Guidance Center, and Wayne Law of Mental Health Kokua on Kauai. Thanks to all you listeners out there. You know, we weren't taking any new calls today, but feel free to contact our talkback line. Leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Audio Archive at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.